Greeny with Mike Greenberg, the podcast.
Back and busier than ever, Greeny presented by Progressive Insurance. Literally in the last 30 seconds, I got significant news that is going to absolutely change the way we open this show. Jay Will is here. I'll play the open anyway.
Here we go!
Only one place to start.
North Carolina State's magical March run continues. For the first time since 1983, North Carolina State is going to the Final Four.
Through all of the adversity, they never lost their faith and stayed together, and it means a lot.
NCAA tournament has been a lot of fun. Games have been good. Final Four should be interesting. Women's basketball tonight may be the most anticipated night in the history of women's college basketball when you consider the way the stage is set with Paige Beckers and Juju Watkins and LSU, the defending champs, and Caitlin Clark and all of that. And so that with Jay Williams hanging around, that's where I expected this conversation to begin.
What's up, Greeny?
Well, Jay, 3 minutes ago, your friend and mine, Mr. Wojnarowski, has dropped a bomb. Woj bomb. ESPN sources. Philadelphia 76ers star Joel Embiid is nearing a return and expected to play this week. The reigning MVP has been out since January 30th with a left meniscus injury. His status for Tuesday, that's tomorrow, against OKC, is expected later today. So a half hour ago, you and me and Tim Legler had a conversation on Get Up about how this could be, if it happened, the biggest X factor ever dropped into a playoff chase this late in the season. Now Woj is telling us it's on the verge of happening. What do we say?
Third best team in the Eastern Conference. Legit chance to get there as long as you're not matched up against the Boston Celtics. So look, I mean, right now they're an eighth in the East, but you bring back a guy who's one of the most dominant players we have in the game of basketball today with those ancillary pieces. They are right there. I think that matchup against the Milwaukee Bucks, if it were to occur, would be an incredible thing to watch considering Joel Embiid's dominance. Obviously, there's going to be a minutes restriction. There's some challenges that come along with coming back with seven games left in the regular season. You know, I think it's something that Nick Nurse and company is going to have to monitor. But how Joel Embiid, if he's fully healthy and can play, you know, multiple minutes throughout the course of a game. You talk about having 35, 30 minutes. They're one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference. There's no doubt about it.
Now, I'm doing the math. So they're 40 and 35. They have seven games remaining. They're not going to get out of the play-in. That's not – in seven games, they're not going to make up. They're currently two games behind, two in the loss and two games in the standings behind Indiana for the sixth spot in the Eastern Conference. So the likelihood here is it's almost a certainty the Sixers are going to be in the play-in. They're going to be in the first play-in, the first level of play-in, the 7-8 game, which means because the Bulls and Hawks are way behind them. So they'll play Miami. Winner of that game goes in as the 7 seed.
Got to get the 7 seed.
That would get them Milwaukee. The 8 seed winds up with Boston. So that's a huge difference, right? That game between the Sixers and the Heat in the play-in will become one of the most important, because those are two teams, you know, the Heat like to make these runs. Mm-hmm. The Sixers with Embiid become a real threat. That one play-in game, Miami-Philly, becomes a monster game.
Yeah, and by the way, I mean, first off, I would love to see Miami and the Boston Celtics. You talk about the way to open up the playoff series if Miami is at the 8 seed. Also, here's one of the things, if he's able to maintain his health, Greeny, that nobody's going to talk about. You know, the year when Steph and those guys won it, that he won it multiple times, but one of the years, he was hurt for a pretty long stint throughout the course of the regular season. Do you know what that does for your legs?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason why Steve Kerr is talking about Steph Curry trying to limit his minutes, because those legs are so heavy. Now for Joel Embiid missing a significant part of the season, if he's able to find and ramp up the way he's playing and his conditioning is, that is a major advantage for a guy that needs his legs to be as healthy as possible.
Depending on how good
this
the knee
time
is.
Of the season.
Right,
yes.
But it was a knee. So that's the thing, is you just wonder how good the – I agree with you completely. A prolonged rest. There's nothing on earth I hate more than load management and resting and everything else. And the reason I hate it so much is because it works.
Yes.
The more rested team is an advantage. Last year, LeBron got hurt in February. He missed a bunch of time. It helped them make that run through the Western Conference playoffs all the way to the conference finals. So, yes, I could see something like that happening with Embiid here.
Now, it's his knee, and with his size, his conditioning, how do you ramp that up? I think now to get granular into the details of how you get him at the most operative spot to maximize his potential is going to be the challenge for Nick Nurse and company. But still, that's a great problem for the Philadelphia 76ers to have, right? You have your best player back on the court who opens up the floor for a guy like Tyrese Maxey and pick and pop, how you utilize him. And I'm telling you, if you do see the Milwaukee Bucks, even though I do think the Milwaukee Bucks will be the favorite in that series, that is a favorable matchup for him going against Lopez and how he's been able to monetize that down low.
Okay, so just how significant could this be? Let me put it in numbers. When Joel Embiid has played this year, the Sixers are 26-8. That winning percentage would be the second best in the sport behind only the Celtics. Without him this year, they're 14-27. That winning percentage would be 23rd best in the entire NBA. So they go from a team that has no chance of doing anything to a team that has a chance to do what? What could they do if this worked out well with Embiid?
I would still have the Milwaukee Bucks if they found a way to get to that seventh spot to win the series. But it gives him a puncher's chance. That's what, I mean, Greeny, if he's not on the floor, you're taking Milwaukee in that series, no question. You're taking Boston in that series, no question. Obviously, having him back on the floor with some of the most prolific offensive performances we've seen out of Joel Embiid, it does give them a puncher's chance if they hit lightning in the bottle. That's what it does.
And Milwaukee has been somewhat startlingly disappointing, right? I mean, I really thought they had that little stretch there where they caught fire. I'm going back through the standings where it was. They had that stretch there where they won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 straight games. And I thought to myself, here they come. They're finally going to get this thing figured out with Doc. They're playing defense, and the Bucks are going to be really good. And since that time, they've basically been a 500 team again, which is what they have been since Doc became their coach.
I mean, look, against the Lakers, against the Pelicans, both teams shoot over 50% from the floor. It's on the defensive end of the court and that continuity that is the real challenge for the Milwaukee Bucks. People do not fear the Milwaukee Bucks that way as they do the Boston Celtics.
Can you imagine the storylines? Let's just live in a world.
Oh, my God. You're going to do this.
Where it's the Sixers against Doc, where Doc becomes, is now the coach of Milwaukee after he gets fired from Philly last year, comes to ABC for about 11 minutes.
And they win.
And then goes to Milwaukee, and now all of a sudden he gets knocked out by the Sixers. What a story in round one. What a storyline that would be.
I mean, talk about devastation. Talk about the Milwaukee Bucks taking a sway on Griffin as a head coach, not really having too many options, then giving Doc the driver's seat to that car. And if that were to happen, Greeny, you talk about a Philadelphia moment. I mean, everybody in Philly would be, they would lose their mind. In particular, Joel Embiid would lose his mind because there's no better place to come back and get revenge against a coach that you feel maybe didn't have the right insight to get you over the hump than to beat them in the first round.
Greeny presented by Progressive Insurance. Protect your home and auto. Save when you bundle. Get a quote at progressive.com. So that's the enormous story from the NBA, which, again, literally just came across.
By the way, another one. Who else is on the Philadelphia 76ers? Who's a little guard? Patrick Beverley? Who didn't?
Oh, yeah.
Who didn't went to, there's all these storylines that tie into what that once was and where it is now.
Yeah. That would become one of the most intriguing first-round series we've seen in a long time. I remember when the Celtics played Brooklyn in round one 2 years ago, when Brooklyn still had all those guys, and we thought, oh, what's this going to look like? You know, KD and Kyrie, and of course the Celtics wound up sweeping them on their way to the finals that year. That was the kind of first-round matchup that I thought could be like a heavyweight fight. Milwaukee-Philly with Embiid. Oh. That's something that would have been a conference, could have easily been a conference final if Embiid is healthy and we get it in the first round.
I mean, if he's healthy, I'm not sure that the Milwaukee Bucks are second in the East.
No, I'm with you. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it feels like Philly would be in that pole position.
Well, we said it. With him on the floor this year, they've had the second best record in the NBA. So we'll see what they're able to do. Jay Will with us here in our studio. Let's go to the college stuff, which is what we expected.
Women's or men's? Because both are really exciting.
Let's start with the men's for the moment because the Final Four is set. NC State is the Cinderella. We heard it there. They knocked out your beloved Blue Devils yesterday.
Thanks for reminding me.
I was surprised, man. I really was. I mean, Duke, I just thought, listen, I'm not taking anything away from NC State. They're a very good. They've been on a magical carpet ride of a run. The big kid is unbelievably fun to watch. They have a bunch of good, scrappy players. But that thing was all set up for Duke, and I thought they fell apart. They played a terrible second half yesterday.
So you and I were talking about this on Get Up, and here's how I feel as a former player. I don't know if the basketball gods provide you an easier path to get to the Final Four than what Duke had this year.
Yeah.
Vermont, you beat up on them. JMU, you beat up on them. Jamal Shedd, him and I are texting. He feels horrible. He's obviously the top scorer, and he's the heart and soul of the Houston Cougars, right? If he doesn't go down early, I don't think Duke wins that game, right? He comes back out in his jumpsuit. He can't play. Obviously, Jeremy Roach, who he was defending, by the way, goes for all of his 14 points in the second half. They get over that hump, and then you're playing against an 11 seed, a team that you beat at their stadium in Raleigh, at NC State. You lose to them in the ACC tournament. You would think there'd be all the motivation in the world. Kyle Filipowski fouls out, and Tyrese Proctor, a young player that we were talking about being a lottery pick last year, has a donut. Goes 0 of 9 from the field, 0 of 5 from the three-point line. It feels like that entire game was set up for Duke to have an easy run to the Final Four.
That's right, because usually these Cinderellas get there because the team they're playing doesn't know them, right? And you only have one day to prepare in that Elite Eight game. But this is a team they know like the back of their hands. I mean, they're arch rivals, you know, to whatever degree they're arch rivals. I understand that Carolina is really the rival. But, I mean, these guys live, what, 15 minutes apart from each other by car? I don't understand it.
I mean, look, NC State, I have a home in Durham, okay? And North Carolina fans, they always call these fans, I'm just giving you guys real insights here on how people in North Carolina talk about it, right? North Carolina fans, they say, oh, that's kind of like the wine and cheese crowd, right? Like, they show up to games in masses, but they're not overly rowdy.
Which one are we talking about? The
North
Duke
Carolina
fans?
UNC fans.
Oh, the UNC fans.
Like wine and cheese. Like, not overly rowdy. They can get rowdy. They can get there, but it takes a while for them to ramp up, okay? Duke fans, oh, they're mostly from the Northeast. Connecticut, New Jersey, all these transplants. That's what they call Duke fans. Mm-hmm. State fans are local. They're there. They're like, oh, we're the third little brother. We haven't gotten there since Jimmy V. Now you're seeing a squad, 9 straight games. Granted, they were on the 4-game losing streak coming into the ACC tournament.
Yeah.
Kevin Keats was not going to have his job. They wanted him out. By the way, beating Duke, beating UVA, beating North Carolina in the ACC championship, it triggers a 2-year extension for him to get paid more. His job is solidified. Now we're talking about them beating Duke, beating Texas Tech, beating Marquette, DJ Burns, America's big man. This guy's going to be on commercials next year.
Yeah.
He's going to be everywhere. He has a personality of Shaq. You love watching him play. When he gives a small sign, it actually means something. Everybody really is small.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, he's going to be driving around in a Lamborghini in Raleigh, North Carolina. That's how big the personality is. Now we're talking about this team and this coach being one of the best coaches in the Research Triangle
era. Yeah. Zach Edey won't be small next to him, but that's the matchup that we'll get next weekend. And then you mentioned it. Tonight might be the most anticipated night in the history of women's college basketball. Whoever would have thought that a game that involves UConn, which has been the glamour program forever, that has Paige Beckers against Juju Watkins, that would be almost the afterthought. But the game everyone is talking about is Iowa and LSU. It's the defending champs. It's LSU with all the stuff that has swirled around them of late with their coach and the articles and the this and the that and the matchup last year and Angel Reese and all that kind of stuff with Caitlin Clark, who's, you know, the most decorated player that we've seen in all this time. What do we say about this one tonight, 7 Eastern on ESPN?
So I love the matchup. And by the way, it's okay for people not to like each other. You know, I had a lot of friends when I played basketball. But I had no friends on the court.
Mm-hmm.
So, Granny, you and I could be boys, but we step our foot across the line. I'm trying to give you 50. If you're on the ground, I'm going to step over you. I'm not going to offer my hand to pick you up. I want you to know that mentally, where you are in this game is beneath me.
Mm-hmm.
And I like these matchups when we see them. One of the things I don't like, though, as much as I look forward to the rivalry, as much as people are trying to cast these LSU women as the villains here because they talk trash. By the way, Juju Watkins talks trash. Caitlin Clark talks trash, right? So I don't know if it's because there's a multitude of players that like to engage in trash talk, and maybe it's led by Angel Reese, but now it comes down to the game. Now I don't care about whatever you want to say about black, white, Larry Bird versus Magic Johnson, all these dumb things surrounding it. The ball will speak for itself. And can Caitlin Clark get her team over the hump against the LSU team that obviously got the edge last year against them in a national championship game?
It surprises me that I was the favorite. Like, when as I sit and think about the game, it just doesn't feel that way. They are a 1.5-point favorite as we speak.
It's pretty much a pick 'em. It's like a Caitlin Clark text.
But still, I mean, I feel as though Iowa winning tonight would be a bit of a surprise. Not a huge surprise, but a bit of a surprise. Do you not see it that way?
No, I think it would be a pretty big surprise for
Iowa to win.
Yes.
That's what I mean.
Agreed.
So, I mean, and yet they're a 1.5-point favorite. That's the point that I'm making.
Well, I think, look, great opportunities are set up for great players, right? So, obviously, Caitlin Clark last year, I think she really settled for a lot of threes. Look, the last game, man, was on pure display. She is one of the best passers in the game of basketball right now, mm-hmm. women's basketball. So can she get her teammates involved and still drop 25-30? Can she end up having a 30-13 kind of night? Because it's going to take that type of performance to go against Haley Van Lith and the way they play defensively with Kim Mulkey. Say whatever you want to say about her. She is a defensive genius when it comes to game planning. And that's what Caitlin Clark and company will have to face this evening.
Should be a very interesting night. We're looking forward to it.
And then Juju Watkins is the one, Green. I'll just say, as much as I love Caitlin Clark, whenever I watch Juju Watkins play, she is the chosen one. Let's just put that on record.
You think she's the best? And some are saying, like Gino's trying to say that Paige Beckers is the best.
They can say whatever they want. Just watch Juju. Watch how she moves athletically. Watch her basketball IQ. It is different than anybody in college basketball.
It's great to have you here, my man. We'll talk as we continue here. He'll go over to First Take, and we'll get the hashtag crew ready to go as we are listening to ESPN Radio, and we'll be right back.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Greeny today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Greeny, GREENY.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Greeny, the podcast.
We are back on ESPN Radio. My apologies. We've gotten a little out of our usual spots today, and thus I wasn't quite ready. But here I am, and we're back and better than ever. Greeny presented by Progressive Insurance. Let's do 30 seconds here for Grainger, and then we'll run through some of the other stuff that we have today. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. So if you are one of the people who watches this show, as opposed to listens to it on the radio, you might notice we're not sitting in our usual spots today. And that is because there's just some small technical issue going on that required us moving around. It's not worth diving into what it is. But it is a story worth telling, if I may. Because in every group, there's always someone who does this. And in our group, that someone is Brandon. We love Brandon, our stage manager. Tomorrow, it'll be 6 years that he and I have been together on Get Up. Tomorrow will be the six-year anniversary that we launched that show, and he is the best crazy Jet fan and just the most lovable person in the entire world. But he is a person who is very fond of calling everything by its technical name, and so he comes over to me, like, frantically. Bubba and Cam, you'll get a kick out of this. He comes over to me in the last commercial break of Get Up before we're coming on, And what was the word he used?
The word Wheatstone.
Wheatstone. He comes over and says, Greeny, the Wheatstone isn't working. And I said, what the hell is the Wheatstone? I've been in radio 35 years. No one has ever used the word Wheatstone in a conversation to me. So as I look at it now, the Wheatstone is the little box that I plug into, and it just says Wheatstone on it. I guess that's a brand. But that would be like, what would be the equivalent of that? I don't even know what that would be. Like, that would be like calling Vaseline petroleum jelly or something like that. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. He comes over to Greeny. We have a little bit of a problem with the Wheatstone. And I don't know how I'm supposed to react to that, because I have no earthly idea what he's talking about.
You know, you're no closer to knowing what's wrong than you were before he started to talk
further, right. Actually.
Is this so I should have said, like, is this a medical thing? Like, do we need to call a doctor? What is it? What am I supposed to do?
Wheatstone.
About the Wheatstone. And so
it sounds like a farming.
It sounds like a cracker, doesn't it? It sounds like, oh, would you like some Wheatstones? I will have that with a little
your charcuterie
little,
board,
a little cheese. Yeah, a little on that charcuterie. So we got that there, and he's the same one, Brandon, who you may remember, Bubba, who when we were having some other I was having a computer problem. He said, "I'll call MEO."
Oh yeah, of course.
What the hell is MEO? No one even knows what that means.
Including him.
Right.
By the way.
When I asked him, what does MEO stand for? He said, well, I don't know. But that's who I call when something breaks. So, like, I've got that going now. So, thankfully, MEO is not necessary to fix Wheatstone, unless it is MEO. Is it MEO we call to fix the Wheatstone?
It is MEO.
It is MEO. So,
perfect.
Can we get MEO on the Wheatstone over here, please? That's what I'm trying to do.
Sounds like a topping.
Now, with that having been said, let me bring Cam and Hembo into the conversation, because the enormous breaking news that we got literally 1 minute before we came on the air to do this radio show involves your favorite city and your favorite team. Joel Embiid coming back as soon as tomorrow against OKC. What does he make the 76ers going into this year's playoffs?
He makes the 76ers the second best team in the Eastern Conference, so long as he is Joel Embiid. There's a pretty big gap, at least a pretty big gap in my opinion, between the Celtics and basically everyone else. If you look at the Celtics' record, obviously, and perhaps even more tellingly, their scoring margin, their net rating, things of that nature, the differential between they and their opponent, they're not just the best team in basketball. They're the best team in basketball in the last several years. They are just bludgeoning people. It's like an event when the Celtics lose a basketball game. But right now, there is no team, aside from Boston, that has, I think, a clear and obvious path to the conference finals. There's no obvious reason why that team should not be Philly, with Joel Embiid, who was averaging more than a point per minute at the time in which he was injured. The Sixers, at that point, had the second best net rating in the entire Eastern Conference. They're the second best team in the East still, so long as he's him. And I'm not looking in any way like at Milwaukee like they're this kind of juggernaut, just you know, because they have all the celebrities on their team, the players and the coaches. The Sixers, when whole, are the second best team in the NBA and should reach the conference final.
Yeah, let me give you sort of the English way of saying what you just said. He scored more points than he has played minutes when he has been on the floor this season, Embiid. He scored over 1,200 points in 1,150 minutes. He was averaging a career-high 35.3 points per game, plus 5.7 assists, which is also a career-high.
Man.
Now, he's playing as well as he's ever played. And then down he goes. Now maybe he gets back up again just in the nick of time. Now, Cam, I ran through it with Jay Will, for those who were just joining us. They don't have enough time to get out of the play-in. They cannot play themselves out of the play-in. They only have 7 games left, and they're 2 games behind Indiana for the 6th seed. So they're not going to get there. So they're going to have to win. I think that game against Miami becomes critical. Oh. So it's almost a certainty that the 7-8 game in the East is going to be Philly-Miami. The winner of that game gets Milwaukee. The loser of that game gets a 1-game, you know, for your life scenario to try and play Boston. So it feels to me like they have 7 games left, Cam, but the really important one is the 8th one. Mm-hmm. If they beat Miami in whenever it is, 2.5 weeks, then that series with Milwaukee becomes one of the best first-round series we've seen in a long time.
It would be ridiculous to play Doc in the first round. And I am skeptical because I'm a jaded Sixers fan and they keep having these playoff collapses. It's a new coach. new system. The offense was working so well when Embiid was in there. He was having a historically great offensive season. So it all stands to reason that when he's back, that they are the second best team in the East. I have to see what he looks like first, and I am very optimistic, more so than I would have been, because he has these 2 weeks to ramp up. Like, if he had come back right when the play-in started, and I know, you know, he's been working hard to make sure that doesn't happen, I would have been more skeptical. But I do think that with the 2 weeks to ramp up, they have 7 games left. He probably plays in 5 or 6 of those. If he looks good, I will be more optimistic than I would have been. I had pretty much already written this season off because there was a chance that he wasn't going to come back at all. But all that being said, you get to the first round series with Doc if you can get past the Heat. Huge, 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 huge series. On paper, the Sixers should be probably the favorite if Embiid's playing the way he was. We just don't know if he is yet. And they just have all this history that I can't get past, even though it's a new team and a new system.
Can you imagine Doc Rivers?
Oh my gosh.
Leaving ABC the way he did. And again, I have no bad blood. If that's what Doc wanted to do, God bless him. I don't mean that I will take personal glee in this, but there will certainly be a lot of people who do. If he winds up leaving that, go in the middle of his first year, going to Milwaukee to take over that job where the team, I think they were 34-13 when he got there. Do I have that right?
And they're 15-13.
And they're 15-13. I was about to say, they're a 500 team since he got there, basically. And then he winds up, of all the teams, playing Philly in the first round and loses. That
especially if they go up like 2-0, 3-1 in the series and the Sixers come back in the series and has another one of those collapses. Oh. It's like what happens when a movable force meets a, you know, what
Doc Rivers,
what's the thing? Yeah, meets Doc Rivers. bundled that expression.
But I want
the Sixers
so
love playoff collapses, but so does Doc Rivers. So which one of those is a higher power?
Yeah, which is the irresistible force and
that's
which is the immovable object?
I want it so bad. Before Doc Rivers arrived, the Milwaukee Bucks were 18-6 in clutch time games. Since he's arrived, they're 5-8 in those games. Since Doc Rivers got there, they have the 16th ranked offense and the 11th ranked defense. It was very bizarre to me at the time. My assumption was that there's something here that I don't know about the coaching situation, and that bringing in Doc Rivers was obviously the right thing to do. I heard very little hanging in the media aside from JJ Redick and a few others. As it turns out, Doc Rivers is the same coach that he always was. The Milwaukee Bucks have struggled in the most important games they've played this year, and I would feel awfully good as a Sixers fan, given where we were, if we wind up getting Milwaukee in round one.
So it does feel like that's the way it's going to go. Let me get a quick check-in here. Because Brandon just walked in the door. Is MEO coming in to work on Wheatstone? How are we doing right now on MEO and Wheatstone?
TBD.
Oh, TBD? We are TBD
at least
on
I know
MEO
what that
and
means.
Wheatstone. Okay, one way or another, it is TBD on MEO and Wheatstone. In the meantime, let's go back to where we expected to begin.
North Carolina State's magical March run continues. For the first time since 1983, North Carolina State is going to the Final Four.
Through all of the adversity, they never lost their faith and stayed together, and it means a lot.
So this kid, the big kid, DJ, at NC State, am I the only one who didn't know anything about him before this tournament began? Like, was he a known commodity? Like, I know Zach Edey. I know all the big stars in this tournament. The kid Kinect, who was on Tennessee yesterday, is going to be a lottery pick. Like all these guys, I don't feel like anyone was talking about this guy. And now he has managed to become the biggest star in the NCAA tournament by far. Like, it's not even close. Like, Connecticut might be having the most dominant run that we've ever seen of all time. And DJ Burns is the only person anyone is talking about. I think it was it Clark Kellogg? Who was it yesterday that said he's got Shaq's personality? Like he does. He's got this big, lovable personality. And they just obliterated Duke in the second half yesterday in a game that shocked me. That was the game. I still cannot believe how badly Duke played in that
game. This is a run for the ages for NC State. I mean, you've heard the story a million times, how their coach was nearly fired. They needed the bank three in overtime just to advance in the ACC tournament. But over the last 9 games, they've won all 9 of them. They've needed to win all 9 of them. And during that time, DJ Burns is 63 of 97 from the field. He's shooting 65%. You're surprised when the ball doesn't go in the net. That's because it only doesn't go in the net like a third of the time. Yes, obviously his appearance and his style of play is especially endearing. But there isn't anything Cinderella-like about what they're doing. I mean, they're beating good teams. In many cases, they're beating good teams by a lot, and they just bent Duke over yesterday. I couldn't believe how much they imposed their will in that game. Kyle Filipowski got his lunch money stolen, and NC State deserves to be there, and I'm giving them absolutely a puncher's chance to beat Purdue in the Final Four.
Yeah, look, I mean, Purdue has, for the longest time, been disappointing in this tournament. Now, that was a... I tell you what, look, I'm a Big Ten guy. I'm a Big Ten fan. I watch them play all the time. I know that team. Northwestern beat them once this year and absolutely should have beaten them the second time in Purdue. It was a very unfavorable whistle. Let's say that as charitably as we can. What?
I want to go there with you. The officiating
on Zach Edey
is a major storyline.
Well, just get used to it. I mean, that's every single game. So there is a rule that everything he does is not a foul. And everything anyone does to him is. And that's just been the way it has been for a long time. And look, I'm not taking anything away from the kid. He is extremely, for a guy with his size and who doesn't have the sort of the gracefulness that some of the other bigs do, he's got a really nice touch around the basket. He played great defense yesterday. He scored 40 points. I mean, he was spectacular. I'm taking nothing away from him. But if you're upset with the way the game is officiated when he's involved, welcome to Big Ten basketball. That is every single night.
Yeah, so that's going to be a huge storyline. If I'm the opposing coach in any game in which Purdue is the opposing team, I am saying anytime there's a microphone in front of my face, I'm challenging the officials. I want to make sure that every person in the stadium, officials are included, are watching Zach Edey and no one else, because he gets away with more stuff than I've ever seen. And I'm not necessarily disparaging the officiating, because he's a very difficult player to officiate. But there's an arm bar like practically every play that no one else gets away with. I don't really understand why we're just going to decide that he doesn't have to play by the same rules. If NC State can find a way to get him in foul trouble, that's the game. I mean, if you get his second foul early in the first half, that's the game. You best believe that will be their strategy number one going into that basketball game.
Maybe. I mean, but I don't know that NC State is that team. Like, I would have said that about a lot of other teams. But, I mean, look, DJ Burns, I was just looking this up to make sure I'm not crazy. He averaged 13 points a game this season. This came out of nowhere. He was honorable mention all ACC. like we're not talking about, like, one of the, you know,
10 best players in the ACC.
That's what I mean. Like, so I'm totally flabbergasted by what he has become, what they have done. That's the performance of the week. It's brought to you by Skechers Footwear, stylish comfort for men, women, and kids. Meantime, no one is touching Connecticut. I sat there and listened to people talking on Friday. Oh, Illinois is the one team that could beat Connecticut. Illinois's got this, they got that. Connecticut hasn't seen a team with this. They have a Charis Shannon. 30-0. 30-0. I've been watching basketball 50 years. I've never seen a 30-0 run in a game of that magnitude. I mean, that was like an AAU moment. Like I had flashbacks to watching Stevie's team play against guys, you know, against teams that had like two future pros on them. Like, that's what it was. That one-sided. UConn is that much better than everybody.
They outscored San Diego State and Illinois 91-50. After halftime, in 40 minutes of basketball, they're plus 41 better than teams in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. I think they're not beating any NBA team. I wouldn't go that far. But they're as good as any college basketball team I have seen in a long, long time.
Can I tell you, I saw a headline that said, Dan Hurley was upset about something some analyst tweeted. And my first thought was, please God, don't let it be me. Whatever it is, I just don't need that in my life again. And it turns out, thank God, it wasn't.
Some other analyst?
He's mad at somebody else. Let him be mad at somebody else for a change. I'm not going there. I'm not kidding. I'm not doing anything. I'm just saying no one is playing with Connecticut. It doesn't matter. They're going to beat Alabama easily.
What about the Hawks?
And they're going to be... I'm not getting into that. Don't you sucker me back there.
The magic?
And get me back in trouble. I had a brutal week last week. I'm not doing this again. So they could not beat an NBA team. But neither can any college team beat them. That is as far as I'm willing to go. All right. Hembo, we got a lot more to do today. Give me a little trivia.
Group trivia. There are four schools that have won a Division I men's basketball title with at least three different head coaches. You're going to give me all schools to win a men's basketball championship with three different head coaches. That's the group question today.
Three different coaches. I love the question. The answer is next, ESPN Radio.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
Greeny, the podcast.
Greeny with you on ESPN Radio. We're live at the Seaport. We're brought to you by Grey Goose. Really great little week we have working here in sports. Obviously, huge games on TV tonight. Men's Final Four all set. NFL draft right around the corner. We're flying. Ambo's got a good trivia going. Let's do it.
There are four schools that have won a Division I men's basketball title with at least three different head coaches. You're going to give me all four schools.
All right. So in addition to the hashtag crew, Pineapple Jack and, Jack and Brandon are helping us go through these. And we've got two of them for sure. Right. So we might as well just say them. I can think of in the last 15 years, three different coaches who've won it at Connecticut. So that's obviously one of them.
That's correct.
Kevin Ollie, Jim Calhoun, and Hurley.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can think of three coaches who've won it for Kentucky. Adolph Rupp, Tubby Smith, and, actually, I can think of four because Patino won it and Calipari won it. So Kentucky has four.
Kentucky actually has five.
Okay, even better.
Joe B. Hall.
Oh, yeah.
In 1978.
Yes, that's right. They beat Duke in the championship game. Okay, so Bubba and Cam, that leaves us with two more. So I can think of two coaches who've won it at Michigan State, at UCLA, at North Carolina, at Louisville, and at Villanova. But that doesn't really help us. The tournament goes back to 1939, so the question is, like, who was winning championships, like, in the 40s? And the dominant program in the 50s, I think, was Kentucky with Adolph Rupp before right. Wooden got to UCLA. And, like, the New York teams, the New York schools, like St. John's and schools like that before the big point-shaving scandals were very dominant. But I don't know. So we're at this point, unless you guys have an idea here, I'm guessing when it comes to these other options.
Yeah, I think all the ones we have with two, one of the, you know, a couple of them must just have ones that we don't know about. So I don't think we're missing any, but we have a bunch with two. So I think we're just shooting in the dark with some of these.
So Louisville, we've got Patino and we've got Denny Crum.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a program that has a lot of historical basketball significance. Like that rivalry with Kentucky goes back before Denny Crum.
I feel good about them.
So someone somewhere along the line might have won a championship there. I don't have a better guess, so we're going to say Louisville.
That is incorrect.
Damn it.
Those are the only two.
Great.
The only two at Louisville.
Is it Nova?
No, it's
is
just
it,
those two
is
at
it
Nova.
UCLA?
No, there's only two at UCLA.
Is it Carolina?
It is Carolina.
So it's Dean Smith and Roy and who?
Frank McGuire in 1957.
All right.
Come on.
And then the last one?
Is Kansas. Larry Brown, Bill Self, and Fog Allen.
That again. All right. It's a good question.
It was gettable, right?
No, it was gettable. I can't look. It's all. It's the usual suspects. We can't sit here and say, oh, we would never have guessed North Carolina and Kansas.
True.
Yeah, the answers were four blue bloods. So.
We just went for it. So, all right. I have no issue with that. In the meantime, none of them were ever more dominant than this Connecticut team has been on the men's side. On the women's side, for those of you who don't follow this closely but are getting into it a little bit here, because we got the games tonight, and, I mean, the explosion in popularity of the sport, particularly swirling around Caitlin Clark, has been remarkable. But I'm seeing a ton of conversation around the LSU women's team, who, of course, are the defending champs, and they have the controversial coach in Kim Mulkey, and there was that really an article that was written about them in the LA. I don't know what the article about her in the Post. I'm not talking about that. But, you know, to describe them with some of the terms that we use to describe them, I really thought was distasteful. I understood why they were offended by that. And so that matchup tonight. And then, oh, by the way, UConn, who sort of started all of this with another one of the best players in the country in Paige Beckers, playing against Juju Watkins from USC, who, when it's all said and done, may actually wind up being the best of all of them. This might be the best night that sport has ever had.
In terms of the buildup, in terms of the hype, I think you're exactly right. We have at ESPN Bet the Iowa women as a 1.5 favorite over LSU. I actually checked BPI, our basketball power index, and they have the game as a dead heat. 50-50. So I think that 1.5, more than anything, is just shaded in Iowa's direction because of the public interest in betting on Caitlin Clark. The Connecticut women are a 3.5-point favorite over USC and superstar Juju Watkins. These games are going to do enormous numbers for cable, for a weeknight cable Elite Eight matchups. This is going to be a pretty historic night for the sport and for ESPN, and I think both of these matchups, based on the point spreads, have the chance to be super compelling.
And I'll tell you the story that it makes me think of. So I can tell you exactly when this was. It was the day after Gino Auriemma and UConn won a national championship with an undefeated season. So maybe 2010 or 11? Was it one of those years?
2010 it would have been, yes.
2010. And Gino Auriemma comes on the next day. And the narrative around the sport was, is UConn's dominance bad for the interest in women's college basketball? For all the people who have an interest in seeing the sport grow, is it bad that this one team is just so good, so much better than everyone, no one could even touch them? Does that take all of the mystery out of what's about to happen, and is that a reason people are less interested? And it was an interesting storyline. There were some people who were on the side of, no, you know, it's great to have one team out there for everyone to shoot at, and the other side were saying, no, it's killing the sport. I don't bother watching the game because no one can ever beat them. And we, on Mike and Mike, we talked about that a lot in that time, and we had Gino on after they won, and I asked him the question. I said, Gino, there are people who will say your dominance is bad for the sport. How do you respond to that? And I'll never forget what he said. He said, it might be. It might make less people interested in it. But the solution is not for us to get worse. The solution is for everyone else to get better. And in a decade, that's exactly what has happened. UConn is still an excellent program. They might wind up in the Final Four, again, if they win tonight. But they're not dominant in the way that they were because all these other programs, many of these girls probably grew up watching UConn, dreaming of someday being in that spotlight. The sport has grown exponentially in that time. And so all of a sudden, here's South Carolina, not even playing tonight, by far the best team. They haven't lost a game all year long. Here's USC with a star. Here's Connecticut still in it with the star. Here's Caitlin Clark, one of the biggest stars in American sports today. Here's the LSU women, one of the most talked about teams in American sports today. So what Gino talked about has happened. The rest of the country caught up to them. And as a result, you have a sport now that is in a position that not only has it never been, but I will admit, I would never have thought it could be.
They're experiencing a surge. Since Connecticut last won the championship, South Carolina's won it twice, Notre Dame's won once, so has Baylor, so has Stanford, and so has LSU. Like, that parity that you asked him about that day has actually happened. It takes these things years to happen, but not only do we have more teams that are at the top of the mountain, but college basketball, women's college basketball, has done an outstanding job of building its brand and building its stars. Any league, professional or college, should take a page out of that playbook, because they have more household names in that sport than they did a decade ago by a long shot.
I don't even like that I'm about to say this, but I'm going to. How many players in Major League Baseball today are more recognizable than Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, Juju Watkins, Paige Beckers? In that order, because those are the right. Those are probably the four best known players
probably in that order.
Let's just say Caitlin Clark. Is Shohei Ohtani the only baseball player with more name recognition immediate in America right now than Caitlin Clark?
Aaron Judge might be
Aaron Judge.
There.
Those two. I'm with that.
I'm not sure there's an obvious third top of head, because she has transformed the landscape and appealed to such a wide swath of the audience.
But the point is it's not just her. Angel Reese at this point, I think, that level of famous.
That's right.
That level of nationally famous.
Man, tonight's going to be good.
It's remarkable. All right, looking forward to it. Got some football coming up next off the top of the hour. MEO's on the way with the Wheatmans. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to Greeny, the podcast. You can listen live each weekday morning at 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio. Or watch the show through the Watch tab on the ESPN app. Also catch Greeny on Get Up, weekday mornings at 8 on ESPN. And also available wherever you get your podcast.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.